You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast series. Tribalism in Law by Tara Smith.
So I'm speaking on tribalism in the law. The tribalist mindset has increasingly been infecting our legal system, as government policies are promoted not by reference to the function of the law, protection of individual rights, but to appease the demands of competing groups who clamor not based on the merit of their ideas, but on their groupness. We're women, we're gays, whatever. The overall effect of this has been to poison the legal system, coloring it steadily less objective. And you need to think about what that means, less objective law or non-objective law. What that means, essentially, is the government's coercive power is unleashed from its purpose. And from the discipline of reason, it's unleashed to do as it pleases. That means it's a direct threat to your freedom, okay? Now, on the handout, I have given you an outline of what I'm going to do this morning. I'm going to speak for a while, actually, just about what tribalism is and isn't. Then I will turn, well, I will briefly talk about what's wrong with tribalism, and then I will turn to zero in on tribalism in the law, its manifestations in the activities of the three main branches of government, and some of its manifestations in what we're seeing in the substance of the law, the administration of law, and the authority of law. Then finally, I'll say a little bit about the damage from all this. I do want to mention there are many things on the handout that I'm not going to make direct reference to during the talk, but I would really recommend that you look at it all later on because I think some of it can be really helpful on understanding tribalism in general. Okay, most of what's on the handout is about that and not law per se. But let me start by talking about what tribalism is. And already, obviously, from Greg, we have some good, started talking about this in a very helpful way. Now, easily, one could give a lecture on this itself, tribalism. I just want to highlight a few key features. And I give you the primary definition I found in the Oxford English Dictionary. It's on your handout. Tribe, a group of people forming a community and claiming descent from a common ancestor. And it gives the example, the 12 divisions of the people of Israel, descent from the 12 sons of Jacob. According to tribalism, the source of reality, of truth, of value is the group. Truth resides not in the logic of the group's beliefs, the validity of their ideas, but in their groupness. Treat our claims as worthy because we're us. What makes us a group worthy of respect? Well, we were born with this skin pigmentation, right? Or of this hereditary lineage. Or with these physical organs, in this geographic area, Serbia, Bosnia, south of the Mason-Dixon line. Now notice, you do not control these things, right? They're accidental. I'm a white woman, okay? No disguise going on. There you go, I'm a white woman. It wasn't my choice. It wasn't my evasion either, right? It wasn't up to me. But tribalism maintains that's what's important about you. These accidental characteristics that you happen to inherit. Which implies individual reasoning, the will, action, those are not significant. Tribalism elevates the accidental over the chosen. Happenstance over decision. The collective over the individual. Feeling over reason. We want it. As opposed to, we can prove it, that it's the right way to go, right? Tribalism represents the attitude, our group, right or wrong. Rather than, our group's view should be adopted because evidence and reason demonstrate its logic. And because tribalism rejects reason, under its outlook, you get ahead not by creating things based on reason and trading with others to mutual benefit, but by beating others, wresting the quarry from them, from their hands. So it's an us-them mentality based on a zero-sum picture that requires combat. You get by grabbing. Now, that's a very, very quick sketch, I think, of some of the key elements of tribalism. A few more clarifications, though, before I move on. We have to distinguish, we have to distinguish tribalism from collectivism on the one hand, and from the legitimate uniting of individuals on the other, okay? So first, on the second of those, doing things in cooperation with other people doesn't make you a tribalist. Right? Not any group affiliation is tribalist. There's nothing wrong with groups. Many groups are harmless. Many groups are positively good. Many groups are mistaken, but not tribalist. So just a few quick examples of different sorts of groups. You might belong, without being a tribalist, to the Brentwood Neighborhood Association, or perhaps to the University of Michigan Alumni Association. You might be a supporter of a particular political party, or a member of the ACLU, or the NAACP, or Greenpeace. Note, even affiliation with a mistaken ideology, such as some of these, or a religious organization, right? Pacifism, that doesn't make you a tribalist. It depends on the reason for which you belong. Men joined by convictions on the basis of considered beliefs, that's fine. That's not tribalist association. Okay, so that's one clarification. The other is, and again, already Greg talked about this a little bit, but I think it's helpful, I hope it's helpful, to be building and on some ideas of other speakers as well as putting things in somewhat different ways. It's a mistake to equate tribalism with collectivism. Tribalism is a subset of collectivism. The species of collectivism that groups people together not on the basis of their thinking, their chosen beliefs about religion or economics, Marxism for instance, but on the basis of given physical characteristics. Tribalism is collectivism whose basis rests in blood, body chemistry, genes, geography, unchosen physical characteristics. So it's pre-intellectual. It's the love child of collectivism and anti-intellectualism. Tribalism is non-cognitive collectivism, you might say. Okay. I don't know about you, but I like some of those formulations. I thought some of those were decent, so I put them on the handout. Yeah, I can't see you anyway, so you're all agreeing readily. Oh, that got a laugh. That's not a good sign of whether or not that's what you were doing, but anyway. So what's wrong with tribalism? This is number two on the outline. What's wrong with tribalism? Well, it views people in a lowest common denominator way, it's determinist, it's collectivist, and it's irrational. But other than that, what's not to like? Let me say just a little bit about some of these, not even all of them. It treats people in a lowest common denominator way. What do I mean? While thinking is man's distinctive calling card, the use of his rational faculty. That's what distinguishes individuals in their morality, their character, their objective value to others. Tribalism holds that what matters is what people have in common, regardless of their reasoning. Everybody was born somewhere, so I need to know, where were you born, right? What's the geographic area? Everybody was born one sex or the other, so what are you, right? I also said it's irrational. And here, notice, it's not irrational by mistake as tribalism falters, you know, in the attempt to use reason. It's brazenly irrational. It's irrational on principle. It's anti-rational, right? Its view is we don't need reason. We don't respect it. I don't go by reason. I go by race, ethnicity, geography, etc., right? Solidarity with my group is more important than evidence or logic. Tribe over truth. It erases the individual. You personally do not matter. You, as a woman, now please note, azza, that is spelled A-Z-Z-A. You always got to be on the lookout for the azza. As a woman, as a gay woman, as a white male, God forbid, okay, right? Oh, azza. But notice, you, the individual, Thomas, Maria, whoever you, no, you're a token. You're one of them. You're as a group, okay? So, obviously, you could take a lot more time on that. Let me move on to tribalism's corrosion of the law. Here I'm going to trot through a number of examples occurring in all three branches of government to indicate how tribalism is increasingly manifested. And then I will also just comment a little bit on how it's coloring the content and the administration of our law and the authority of law. I hate this part of the lecture, but I need to do it. It's good for us to know what's going on. So I'm sorry, this is rather unpleasant. But I'll try to go through these examples quickly. In the legislature, what do we see increasingly? Shameless gerrymandering to manipulate voting districts to make the election of a certain party more likely, right? Let's get ours in the House. Ours because we're white Kansans, or we were born here, or we're angry women, right? State legislatures, sometimes they game voting rights laws in order to discourage that tribe from voting. Congress shuts down the government, as it has a few times in recent years now, rather than pass a budget. Does this obstruction take place over matters of high principle? It'd be hard to maintain that with a straight face, given all the compromises that are embedded in the ensuing deals that they eventually work out. No, but we've got to send a message for our guys, right? Good optics with our base. Legislators routinely enact bills without regard for constitutionality, which, of course, they're sworn to uphold, punt that responsibility, let the courts sort it out, while they cater to the demands of their folk, right? Our voters want this. Our farmers, our fundamentalists, they want this subsidy, this minimum wage, this tuition credit, so that's what we shall do. To hell with the rights of the businessmen affected in certain cases, or the taxpayers, right? Let's turn to the executive branch. Trump's trade wars, us against them. Team USA against Mexico or China or whoever, right? Imposing tariffs to favor our side. The casualty here is obvious. Every individual who benefits from free trade and whose rights to trade are sacrificed to the glory of Tribe USA, whoever that is. Think about Trump's xenophobic policy on immigration. Natives versus foreigners. Anyone not born on this soil is an invader, an insidious peril. And in recent days, even people born on this soil, maybe some of them are those, you know, they have the wrong hereditary lineage, right? So we've got the same tribalism at work. Think about Trump's use of pardons. His first pardon was of that sheriff, I don't know how you say his name, in Arizona, Arpaio, right? Who had been found guilty of criminal contempt of court. Departing from longstanding practice, Trump didn't consult with lawyers at the Justice Department. He pardoned Arpaio basically because he's one of us, right? Arpaio plays for my team on immigration, and my team gets its way when I'm in the White House. Rather than the law must be followed, regardless of who's in power, because legal officials' power is supposed to be exercised in conformity with the law. Indeed, that power comes from the law. And you have to keep in mind here, Arpaio wasn't just some guy, right? He himself was a legal enforcement official, a sheriff, right? And he was found guilty of insubordination, defying court legal orders. That's what Trump sees fit to pardon, right? Dismissing rule of law. More recently, Trump revoked the security clearances of former defense and intelligence officials who criticize him. Again, basic idea, you don't show loyalty to me personally, you will be punished. In sum, Trump epitomizes the personalized politics of tribes. He continually uses the levers of government power to favor friends and threaten enemies. Jeff Bezos, the NFL, journalists, make that unfriendly journalists. Fox is in the right tribe, right? I'm sorry, I get so aggravated even talking about this. But let me just give you a couple of other examples from the Democratic side. Think back to toward the end of Obama's presidency. And what we've learned since about Russian meddling in the election and everything, and supposedly he had the evidence of, I mean, there was evidence coming to him at this. But we read, he didn't say anything about it for fear of looking partisan. He didn't want to be perceived as trying to tip the scales in the election toward Clinton. In other words, our tribe and the image of our tribe, the Democrats in this case, these are more important than electoral integrity, right? Than the legitimacy of an election. In other words, I'm sorry, I think I just said that. How did I say this? In other words, he elevated projected perceptions of what team he was on as more important than seeing to it that our elections were honest. I think this is a really perverse implication of the importance that tribalism has assumed in our psyches and in our thinking. But I can even think back to President Clinton, Bill Clinton, when he first came to office. He was quite proud of the fact that he was going to assemble a cabinet, some of you are old enough to remember, that looks like America, right? Group representation is all. Competence, ability, relevant experience, yeah, maybe, but she has the right headdress, right? It looks good, playing to these tribalist instincts. The judiciary. Battles over judges have deteriorated into another arena for tribal combat. The principal aim is getting our guys on the courts. Our guys, distinguished by their policy preferences on guns, gays, abortion, regulations. The assumption is judges don't go by the law, the Constitution, they go by political preferences. And they should. So we got to get our political stripe on the bench. Rather than, seek judges who go by the law. I think a real nadir for the rule of law and one of the most disturbing events of the last 2 or 3 years, which has been pretty much an unrelenting parade of disturbing events, I think a real low point for the rule of law was the Senate's refusal to consider Obama's Supreme Court nomination of Merrick Garland after the death of Scalia. This was completely partisan. This was in bad faith. It was a subversion of our legal system. But in the jungle of tribes, warring tribes, adherence to rules is for chumps. It's mano a mano combat. Closely related, people, individual citizens, evaluate specific court decisions on the basis of their agreement with their preferred, the agreement of those decisions with their own preferred outcomes, rather than on the grounds of the court's reasoning about the law. In other words, people demand the politicization of courts, as they demand of judges, do what our tribe wants. We disabled, we trans, right? Again, tribes should triumph over law. The courts, in turn, often succumb to these pressures. Individual justices will admit in speeches and interviews, sometimes, not all of them, but sometimes some of them will say, we didn't do that, would have been right, but the country wasn't ready for it, or that would be too divisive. In other words, the judicial thinking is, the Constitution would dictate ruling X, but the tribes can't handle it, right? We better not go there. They won't like it. All right, I've cut a few examples. There are many, many more that I could give. All of this is disheartening. Let me, though, say a little bit about that second perspective on the law, how tribalism has been shaping the actual content or substance of law and its administration and authority. Let me say, give you just a few examples in these realms. In substance, what the laws are, we've got rampant regulations designed largely to cater to tribes. For that same purpose, our legal system is riddled with exemptions, subsidies, carve-outs, tax deductions for the group of the month, the tribe of the time. Or consider discrimination law, myriad forms of anti-discrimination law in this country, affirmative action at schools, in businesses, in hiring, firing, promotion, pay scales, the composition of a board of directors, have you got the right number of minority groups on it, right? Who may not be discriminated against? People of this sex, this race, this national origin. Again, tribal identity rules. Think about the administration of the legal system. The almost paranoid aversion to the use of racial profiling. Now, Data analytics have been all the rage in the last few years, just about in every industry, every field you can imagine, right? Indeed, our justice system uses data analytics to compile information about plenty of people in unfavored groups. Parolees, repeat offenders, child molesters, people who use guns. Why do they do this? Why does the justice system do this? To try to make policy and employ resources in the most efficient and effective ways possible. But racial analytics? Toxic. I mean, I'm a little afraid even to bring up the topic in this talk, right? Rather than assess exactly what conclusions would be drawn from what racial statistics, or what use would be made of these profiles, the very mention is radioactive, because it would offend certain tribes, which is, of course, also insulting to many of the people who are often thought to belong to these tribes. Okay? In other words, the operation of the legal system is hostage to the feelings of tribes. Consider how the law is understood. So again, this is part of the administration of law, how the law is understood and then applied in arguments over free speech these days, where the issue is increasingly framed around who is speaking. Your right to speak is superseded by the question, well, which tribe needs to have its views amplified? The identity of the speaker establishes whether or not his speech will be respected. The legal question has become not whether your speech infringes on anybody else's rights, but who is speaking. Do you say that as a woman, as a black person, right? If a black woman says blue lives matter, referring to cops, well, that's probably okay, right? But if a white man says it, it's hate speech. Insensitivity training for you, or sensitivity training for you, right? The point is, increasingly, we find double standards in the protection of free speech. One standard is the law, the other standard is the tribe. Some tribes, right? If you offend Muslims or gays or blacks, no. Offend atheists, capitalists, white men, no worries. Finally, the most troubling aspect to me, I think this should be the most troubling aspect, is the precipitous decline in people's respect for the authority of law. For legal officials, the question, does the law authorize this action? Am I within my specific authority within, in doing this? Those kinds of questions have been replaced by, do certain groups want it? Groups that'll vote for us? The only constraint that many government officials recognize these days, the only constraint on their actions, is what we can get away with. We don't have to vote on a high court nominee. We can get away with it. Oh, there might be a little bad press. We'll get through that pretty quickly, right? We don't have to pass a budget and pay the government's bills. We can get away with it. We don't have to name commissioners to a government body if we don't like that body, right? Our governors are increasingly willing to defy the law, and the only authority that's respected is the demands of the tribe. We must give them what they want, so they vote for us. Adherence to the rule of law has been replaced by gaw, what you can get away with. That's an ugly word, and it's an ugly phenomenon. Now, to be sure, not every failing of our legal system can be attributed to tribalism. But many of our laws, compromises and fractures and failures, are manifestations of tribalist premises. Even though it's only been getting a lot of attention in the last few years, the term identity politics has been around for at least a decade. But what we're now really seeing is the natural result of identity politics, and that is identity law. And that should give you chills, because it's law in name only. So, a few words on the damage from all this. And I go until what time, Keith? How much time do I have? I end at 10 after 10 or? 10, period. That's it for, okay, Q&A too? All right, so let me say a little bit more about the damage of all of this. Tribalism abandons the rule of law. The rule of law reflects the rule of reason, considered conclusions about the proper means of running a government, how its coercive power will be used. It adopts appropriate ground rules to play by regardless of who holds power, and it abides by those rules, right? A little bit like when you play Monopoly, $200 when you pass go, and it doesn't matter if you're Peter or you're Chrissy or whoever you might be, right? Tribalism, though, politicizes the law. It elevates what is popular with a powerful tribe over what is legal, what is in accordance with the rules, the laws. It's crucial to grasp. Laws aren't the same thing as group preferences. That should be really obvious, but I think people often fumble that difference. Even in a democracy where where majority will may legitimately make some decisions, laws are fundamentally different in kind from what most people want right now. Indeed, laws curb which of our preferences may govern. Only those within the boundaries of the law, the Constitution, are permissible. That's a government of limited powers. That's the rule of law. And that's the only kind of government that can respect individual rights. But tribalism is the rule of men. Might makes right. Might makes law. We make law, our gang, not on the basis of reason or rights, on the basis of power. Clout, threats. If you don't do what we want, we'll make you pay. Don't be fooled by the fact that it's done by a ballot very often at the election booths, right? Tribalism in a suit and tie, in a cool haircut and a Fitbit, it's still tribalism, right? You don't have to be wearing the leaves of the jungle on a skirt, right, in order to be savagely at odds with your freedom. A proper legal system is our bulwark against anarchy, tyranny, the rule of the mob, the rule of power, arbitrarily bossing other people around. But when the legal system succumbs to tribalism, you're helpless. You have nowhere to turn to secure your freedom. All you can do is find a tribe, try to extend its power, and hope for the best. Okay, a few last words. And I want to step back for a minute. Think about the bigger picture a little bit. Why are we here this weekend? Well, I don't know. I wasn't in on the planning of it. You might want to ask Keith and some of the others. I wasn't in on the planning of it, but I imagine that the primary purpose is not so that you can go home and charge people with tribalism. J'accuse. It's not to arm you to be good objectivist tribalists, right? I mean, Keith referred to this last night. That is a real phenomenon, and that's not the point. It is certainly valuable to spot tribalism when it's occurring, so as not to fall for it, and to try to identify exactly what's wrong with the particular claim being pressed on tribalist grounds. But far more important is how you conduct your lives. The antidote to tribalism is doing your own thinking. It's exactly what Greg was lecturing on a few minutes ago, right? Doing your own thinking. Think for yourself. That means when you have doubts, when you have questions, reservations about an idea, you confront them. You confront them yourself in thinking, I got to think that through more. And you do some more thinking or reading, right? And you raise it with other people. You talk to us at the conference. I was having a great conversation last night with one of you about free will, and I kept trying to explain something, and he quite honestly and independently kept saying, no, I don't get that. But that was great. That was a wonderful example, Lewis, if you're out there, of somebody being an independent thinker, which is the only way you can be a thinker. That's the only way out. Right? In particular, I would caution you against what I've come to call supposed to think thinking. What am I supposed to think about Kavanaugh, about birthright citizenship, whatever it might be? What am I supposed to think as a free market person, you know, or as a woman, or as a, catch that as a again, right? Now, be on the lookout for supposed to think thinking. Just think, right? Repeat after me, think for yourself. Yeah? Okay. There you go. But that I think is the single thing I would most urge all of us to battle tribalism, to protect yourself from its damage. Do your own thinking, including about this advice that Tara is giving you, right? Exercise the virtues, what Ayn Rand knew were cardinal virtues, of independence and honesty and rationality. To borrow a leaf from Abraham Lincoln, reason is the last best hope of mankind. So if we're going to get out of this, that's the only way to go, I think. Okay, we have a little bit of time for some questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your lecture, ma'am. My question is, now, I observe that the support systems that we have, like you say, as an international student, when I come here, I would like to build a support system among other, using the resources of other international students, or let's say as a victim of sexual assault or something, you would like to get support from your same gender.
Oh.
So is it a form of tribalism as well?
Oh, that's a very interesting question, sir. And actually, in some ways, I think there's a panel on identity politics and tribalism tomorrow. I hope you're here for it. I'm on that panel. That may be more of an occasion to talk about this. So let me just say a little bit now, which is simply this. There are experiences that some people have in common that not everybody has in common. And because they've had certain experiences, there can be real value in sharing some of their experiences and some of their reactions so that they can most effectively and rationally think through how to deal with these things if they're, you know, wrongs such as genuine sexual abuse or whatever it might be. So there are certainly, it is not necessarily tribalist, right? For some women or some blacks or, you know, on certain grounds to want to get together to talk about, yes, sometimes legitimate grievances, right? That word grievance doesn't always mean it's an unjustified self-coddling something, okay? So that's just to give you some quick indication, but we might want to pursue that more in the identity policy, okay?
Thank you.
It might be very interesting, I'm sure, to hear what the other panelists on that would have to say.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, though. Good question. Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. So the way in which I feel that most people conceive of, you know, the sexy Supreme Court cases that, you know, or get the most controversy is, what are the particular groups that it affects? And so, for example, you know, you take same-sex marriage, or you take whether, you know, the government can, you know, force a baker to bake a cake. It's not conceived of in terms of individual rights, but it's in terms of the group. It's Christians, we got our guy, this is our baker, and, you know, on the side of you know, the protected group, we have, you know, the rights of, you know, homosexuals and all that stuff. And so my question is, what is the proper way? I mean, obviously we approach it from the concept of individual rights, but what is the proper way that we frame this?
Well, yeah. Again, you have to, well, it's true that the sexy Supreme Court cases, the most controversial ones, tend to be most talked about through the lens of this group and that group, and sometimes it's just one versus another, and sometimes it's several on both sides. I guess two main thoughts. First of all, we have a constitution, and we need to act, I mean, and everything that our legal system does, every law it makes, every restriction it imposes, every action or policy it adopts has to be compatible with that law. Unfortunately, we have drifted a long ways. The court has allowed us to drift for a long ways, for like over at least 100 years, really drift away from that. But that is the rule of law. That is our law. We can amend it in certain ways if we want to, and maybe we should on certain things, but that is the fundamental law of the land. So that's what you've got to look at, not who is this going to help, who is this going to, you know, in that tribe, will it tip the scales for this tribe or that tribe? Coming back to the rights issue, another I find very helpful just way of thinking about legal issues is, what's the function of the legal system in the first place? I keep coming back to, You know, just as form follows function, the proper activities of government, of a rights-respecting government, stem from why does it have power in the first place? What's it supposed to do? What is its function? And I talk about this a little bit in my book on judicial review, where I have a chapter just on what is an objective legal system. And the function of the legal system is paramount to how you should even have and draw up a constitution in the first place, right? But the reason why I wanted to say something about the Constitution itself is that to be governed by law is to be governed by the fundamental law of that land, and in our case, it's that Constitution, not to be, which is different from, let's be governed by the best philosophy. Well, Tara has a better idea, or Ayn Rand has a better idea about what the Constitution should be, therefore we should go by that. Yeah, maybe we should ultimately, but only after you amend the Constitution appropriately, okay? So I hope that wasn't too
Thank you.
Bad an answer. Sure.
You have elaborated on how faction of tribes in the political system results in an inconsistent, non-objective interpretation of the law. I would like to hear your thoughts about the consequences if in the future one tribe becomes substantially more dominant than all other tribes, and you can take the tribe to be one particular religion, one particular race, or one particular political party.
I mean, we're going in that direction already, and obviously, at any given time these days, some tribe is a little bit more powerful than another. They might be close in power. The House might be, you know, the number of votes in the House or in the Senate, or who holds the judicial branch, I'm sorry, the executive branch and the legislative branch. So, you know, the balance shifts somewhat. But what are we seeing with the laws that are enacted and the policies that are adopted? We're going to shove it down your throats, and we're going to dictate according to our tribe's preferences. Maybe we'll get away with that for 5 years. Maybe we'll get away with that for 50 years, right? But what we're seeing on both, on the two major sides, and really many of the critics as well, and many of the people who will save us from tribalism, Ben Sasse has a new book. You know, the problem is tribalism. What's the solution? More traditional tribes, more religious tribes, family. Different? No, he says we're all tribalists. That, I mean, that's his, you know, that's his premise. So we need our tribes instead. So, I mean, unfortunately, it's not some futuristic sci-fi I have to project out there. We're already getting it. We're just getting, well, we get this kind of dictation, you know, from the government. We're going to coerce them into paying these taxes. We're going to coerce them into serving these people, as opposed to that kind of coercion and dictation of how you lead your life.
Yeah, that's why I said substantially more dominant, not just slightly more dominant in the short term.
Well, then, I mean, all right. Then look at Anthem again, right? I mean, you know, yeah, it's bad. Sorry.
Okay, let's thank Dr. Smith one more time.
Thanks for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. You can also find us on YouTube. If you like this content, please share or leave us a review. For more information, go to AynRand.org.